Only women can bear children, simple fact. So there's certainly a greater motivation for women to take steps to ensure they do not become pregnant if they do not want to be pregnant. Men can take an interest, to be sure, but they cannot take a birth control pill of their own, or couldn't until recently. Researchers based at the University of Washington have gotten far enough along in the development of a male birth control pill that they have results to show from dozens of men who've taken such pills. Let's get some details on the research and where it is going. At the University of Washington, Stephanie Page, MD and PhD, is endocrinologist and lead researcher. Hi, Dr. Page.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Arthi Thirumalai, who is also an MD and an endocrinologist and researcher. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
So quite a bit of work has gone into this recently, but it's been a bit of a long trail. Dr. Page, how far back does this go?
Well, people have been working on developing a male hormonal contraceptive for almost 50 years, actually. There's been a lot of headway in with other modes of administration besides the pill, including implants, gels, and injections. But we've been a little stymied in, with regards to oral delivery or a pill. And so the results we had recently are exciting in trying to move that forward.
And what is DMAU, D-M-A-U, is the initials. What does it stand for, slowly?
DMAU is dimethandrolone undecanoate. That's essentially a modified testosterone molecule. So its chemical structure has been modified so that its metabolism through the liver is different from other oral testosterone agents. And the undecanoate extends its half-life so that it actually can last in the body longer. And so men don't have to take a pill two or three times a day and can get away with taking it once a day.
Now, that was the issue with some previous versions. Is that right, Dr. Thirumalai?
That is correct. So previous oral testosterone, undecanoate, men needed to take it two to three times a day for it to be effective.
So I guess it's not as simple as just assuming that you can just, you know, you give a hormone, you stop sperm production. It's got a bit more to go with. It's a little more complicated with men.
Yeah. So I think the main difference between men and women is that men make a lot of sperm, whereas in women, you just have to block roughly about one egg every month, right, to successfully block their fertility. So the main reason male contraception has been so stymied is because to get men's sperm counts low enough where you can truly call their fertility as blocked, you need to shut off the production of multiple hormones, and even then that might not be enough to completely block the sperm production, and that's why it's trickier in men.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that part of it. Sure, that, you know, we're talking one egg a month versus, I mean, how many millions of sperm are released at once?
Well, it's 1,000 sperm per ejaculate. 1,000 sperm per minute is what's produced, and at more than 15 million sperm per ejaculate, ml of ejaculate is considered normal.
Mm-hmm. 15 million, you say?
Per ml. So, and in each ml of ejaculate, each ejaculate has several mils, so it's way more than 15 million. Sperm.
All right. We're talking about male birth control pills with Arthi Thirumalai and Stephanie Page at the University of Washington. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Lots of questions, perhaps. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Stephanie, you were talking about the implants, gels, and injections. Was there some resistance to those methods among men who could have used those?
No, not necessarily. When surveys are done of men about hypothetical reversible contraceptives, they're actually quite interested. And when asked if they would prefer a pill, an injection, or a gel and so forth, men have varied responses. The pill usually comes out on top, even across continents and so forth. But men are interested in a variety of forms. And really the goal of the field is to create a menu of options, just like women have a menu of choices. To have lots of different options for men. And again, one is not mutually exclusive of another. Someone could take a pill for a couple years, then maybe their partner's doing the contraception, and then they may want to try an injection for various reasons. So I wouldn't say there's resistance to other forms, but men generally, when asked, say they would prefer a pill.
Is this purely an endocrinology effort, or have you brought in some sociologists and psychologists as well to help with the kinds of things that are acceptable to the people who would be taking the pills?
Sure. So we don't do those studies ourselves. We actually do some survey work with participants in our studies to ask them about their attitudes and whatnot. There's a variety of groups that have worked on the, as you say, the sort of sociological and psychological aspects. those studies are really difficult to do when there isn't actually a product because you're asking hypothetical questions. But certainly there's been some work with large-scale surveys across continents and socioeconomic groups and thus and such over the years.
Arthi, how test DMAU, dimethandrolone undecanoate, before it got to human trials?
So it was actually tested extensively in animals. So we have rodent models, it was tested in rabbits, and also non-human primates, so we're talking monkeys. And it's been shown in animal studies to effectively and reversibly block their production of hormones as well as sperm to levels that that blocked their fertility. And at the same time, despite doing that, it was able to maintain all the androgenic functions in these animals. So we're talking muscle mass, and other androgenic endpoints that we look at in animals. All of those were maintained, fertility was blocked, and when the drug was taken away, everything went back to normal.
How quickly went back to normal?
So that depends on the formulation, so if it's oral versus injectable versus implant. Now, what I can tell you is that before the study that we recently reported, it was also tested once in men as single doses. So this is the second study in men that we actually reported on right now. And in this study, when men received 28 days of the drug, within 3 weeks of the last dose that they received, all their hormones recovered completely into the normal range.
All right, so what, 3 weeks then? You're back to normal. How many rounds of animal tests before you could get to these two rounds of human tests?
So there's many rounds of steps before we actually bring these drugs or any drug gets into humans. So multiple rodent studies, multiple, more than one non-human primate study. I can't give you an exact number, but this is all done in a very stepwise progression. So multiple different animal models are required, and so forth.
Okay, so Stephanie, talk about the presentation of this. It was it's called Endo 2018. Is that what I saw?
Yeah. So the Endocrine Society is a national meeting of all the endocrinologists in the country are certainly invited. Many people are in practice, and then there's a huge academic component. So we were all gathered in Chicago, and that's where we presented the data.
So is it done? I mean, is it once the trial is over, do people just stop taking the stuff you've given them, or what happens?
That's correct. So the previous study that was concluded, men only received the drug for 28 days, and after that they were not taking the drug anymore. However, we're going to be recruiting men for our next study, which is a 3-month study of DMAU, which we're hoping to start next month. And in that, men will receive the drug for about 3 months.
And how many men took it this time, Arthi?
So the previous study, we had 100 men that were recruited into the study between the University of Washington and LA Biomed at Harbor UCLA. And 83 men completed the study, so took it completely for 28 weeks and finished the entire follow-up of the study. And in the next study, again, we hope to recruit 100 men.
All right. So leave it to a journalist to always focus on the small number. Why did the 17 not complete the study?
That's a great question. So reassuringly, none of the 17 men that dropped out of the study had any concerns related to the drug. It was purely for personal reasons, such as, scheduling isn't working or something's come up in their personal life. So there were no concerns in terms of safety of the drug itself.
Okay. That does raise the question, though, about any side effects. I mean, you'd mentioned a couple, Arthi, about the muscle mass, things like that you were noticing in the lab animals that were all fine. But what were the concerns going in, things that you would look at to see if there were side effects?
Absolutely. So when we're modifying the androgenic environment in a man, you're concerned about both the extremes. The primary concern is, of course, we're suppressing their testosterone production. So do they notice a lack of testosterone in their body? So we're talking, are they experiencing hot flashes, any changes in their mood, any changes in their sexual function or desire? And reassuringly, in our study, the vast majority of men experience absolutely no symptoms. A few men experienced a mild reduction in their libido, but that was mostly concentrated in the highest dose. But even in those men, when we asked them to sort of quantify this change by using validated questionnaires, there was actually no difference between them and the men that were receiving the placebo. So these need to be teased apart further. Other things we're looking at are obviously, does the pill affect liver enzymes? Does it affect their blood counts or their blood cholesterol? Does it affect their weight? All of these are things that obviously longer-term studies are better equipped to look at in detail. In our study, there were hints that there may be a slight increase in weight and maybe some changes in cholesterol that need to be explored with longer studies. But again, we don't know the implications of the changes we saw in this study as it was too short.
Stephanie, I know we're talking different physiology, but what's the usual range of months you need with the women's birth control pill to know long-term what the effects are going to be?
Well, it depends on what you're meaning by effects. So when you give, if you want to quantify things like changes in cholesterol, you really do only need a month.
All right.
But if we're thinking about changes in long-term risk for cancer, like breast cancer, that, of course, requires years and years of study. So it really depends. And so for each side effect that we're concerned about, in some respects, we'll have to actually design a particular study to look at that. The long-term safety of any kind of new drug really has to be evaluated over many years, however.
Stephanie Page and Arthi Thirumalai are endocrinologists and researchers at the University of Washington. Stephanie is the lead researcher in a study of male birth control pills in which they recently recruited 100 men. 83 completed the study and took male birth control pills and it had the desired effect. So that was recently presented at the Endocrinologists National Conference in Chicago. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, ideas, ways that men, would you use this yourselves? We'd like to hear from you. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Arthi, you mentioned that everything kind of went back to normal 3 weeks after they stopped taking the pill. So you're certainly studying numbers, but any men report any nothing? Nobody apparently reported anything out of the ordinary during the month they were taking the pill. Afterward, anybody say, oh, this felt different or something when I stopped?
No. So whatever symptoms that men did complain about were either in the few weeks that they did take the therapy or within about a week or so after taking the drug, nobody complained of anything after the entire study was complete.
So any differences in sexual sensation for men? I don't know if that was among the questions you were asking.
That's a great question. So one of the questionnaires we used does actually ask them sort of their level of satisfaction from sexual activity, and there were no objective differences between the men taking the drug and placebo.
So, Stephanie, altogether, how many different things did you monitor? I mean, I can imagine you're looking at sperm counts and hormone levels, and we talked about things like, you know, cholesterol counts. I mean, you're doing a whole lot of chemistry here, aren't you?
You bet. You know, you'd be shocked at how many things you can get from a couple milliliters of blood. So we do monitor many things. We have, you know, this is an early stage development, so the subjects are coming in every couple of, or twice a week, actually, during the month. They actually come in for 24 hours at the beginning of the end of the study so that we get a really good look at their blood pressure, their heart rate, and, of course, all the laboratory analyses that you talked about. We also administer a lot of questionnaires. So we're very, very diligent in these early phases of drug development because we want to get a handle on any major side effects right away. There's no point in investing in something that we know from the outset is going to have significant problems. And remember, contraception for men, we're giving something to healthy guys. So we really need to be careful about side effects and so forth.
Well, and I imagine you went in with a high degree of confidence, given that you'd had the previous studies on rodents and primates. But even then, is there a certain level of unease about, boy, I hope, you know, everybody's fine when we hear from them the first time?
Sure. I mean, you know, this is all done in a stepwise fashion. So we did a previous study where we gave men individual doses. So just one dose. They actually were given it in the hospital. And then we give increasing doses over time. So once you do that, then there's a lot less, you know, we have a lot more confidence. I think the other thing to point out is that we did this study in a stepwise progression in terms of dose. So we did the lowest dose first and made sure everyone didn't have any significant side effects, and then the next dose and so forth. So yes, we always worry. That's our job. But because the way we design the studies is really to ensure that if there is going to be a problem, we see it very early on.
I was pointedly trying not to use the word worry. Thank you for adding it back in.
You bet.
Arthi, are you preparing study results for publication?
That is correct. We actually have a very good draft of the manuscript ready. We're just trying to modify it enough to include all of the possible measures that we looked at in the study. We hope to submit it to a journal very soon.
So will the publication happen before the next round of tests, or is that going to happen simultaneously?
Well, it's probably simultaneous, because we're actually very close to starting the next study in the next few weeks. So I doubt it'll get published in a few weeks.
Sure. So, we have focused just on pretty much the physiological aspects, and certainly just from the man side of things so far. There are obviously dimensions that go way beyond the physical, and talking about sex, love, reproduction. Any testing done anywhere, and here again getting Stephanie into the sociological, psychological side, any testing done on whether women would trust a man who says, oh, it's okay, I'm on an oral contraceptive?
Sure. So there have actually been a number of surveys done of exactly that, mostly in surveying women who are in committed relationships. And I think people will be shocked to hear, perhaps, that women actually do trust their partners. Women in those sorts of studies overwhelmingly say they would trust their partners to use a contraceptive if it was available. And that's hypothetical, but I think it's also interesting. Some of the studies in hormonal contraceptive development for men have actually surveyed female partners. So when you get to the stage where you're actually testing a contraceptive for if it really works, of course, you have to enroll couples in those sorts of studies. And women in those studies are also overwhelmingly positive. I mean, they're a select group. But nonetheless, I think we underestimate men when we suggest that women really wouldn't trust them. I think it's all about different relationships and sharing burdens and so forth. So I think women might be pretty invested in ensuring that their partner is being compliant. But I think women generally will trust their partners. They trust them for lots of things.
Indeed they do. Stephanie Page and Aarthi Thirumalai are endocrinologists and researchers at the University of Washington. Stephanie Page, the lead researcher into work on dimethandrolone undecanoate, that's it, DMAU, the male birth control pill. Stephanie and Aarthi, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.